Welcome to Torah from JTS, a weekly commentary from the Jewish Theological Seminary.
This is Aiden Pink. I'm a rabbinical student at the Jewish Theological Seminary, class of 2025, with a commentary for Parshat Toldot, entitled Isaac, Schlamazel, or Something More. In his book, The Joys of Yiddish, Leo Rosten defines one of the most useful words in our tradition. When a schlamazel winds a clock, it stops. When he kills a chicken, it walks. When he sells umbrellas, the sun comes out. When he manufactures shrouds, people stop dying. In the entire Torah, it seems, there's no bigger schlamazel than Isaac. At the beginning of his life, he's nearly killed by his father. At the end of his life, he's deceived by his son. He barely participates in the courtship of his own wife. Isaac is hapless, passive, an eternal victim, the archetypical schlamazel. That's why the 26th chapter of Genesis is so fascinating. Sandwiched between Rebekah's evocative pregnancy plea in chapter 25 and her and Jacob's great bracha caper in chapter 27, Isaac's adventure in the land of Gerar is understandably often overlooked, but it actually offers a key to his character. He's not so much defined by his passivity as by his active choices, specifically his choice not to deviate from his father Abraham's actions. Again and again in chapter 26, Isaac follows in Abraham's footsteps, sometimes literally. Just as Abraham did, Isaac takes his family to the land of Gerar. Just as Abraham did, Isaac tricks King Abimelech into believing that his wife is actually his sister, and eventually establishes with him a peace treaty. Isaac reopens the exact same wells that Abraham first dug, and the Torah is quick to note that Isaac gave them the same names that his father had given them. Most importantly, God speaks to Isaac and promises to bless you and increase your offspring like God had done with Isaac's father before him, though notably, the blessing is for the sake of my servant Abraham, not for anything that Isaac himself had done. It's not that Isaac couldn't escape his father's shadow. To give Isaac credit, as a person with agency, one must assume that he chose to copy his dad because he believed that this was the way, perhaps the only way, to live a holy life, and presumably felt vindicated by God's blessing, which so closely tied Isaac's reward and legacy to the fact that he was his father's son, and not that he was his own man. So it's no surprise that Isaac would have thought that others should follow precedent as well. This belief was so strong that, according to one midrash, physical suffering did not exist in the world until Isaac pleaded to God that it should be so. When a person dies without suffering, the attribute of divine judgment rather than divine mercy is placed upon them, Isaac said. If you were to bring suffering upon them, the attribute of divine judgment would not be placed upon them. You've demanded a good thing, God replied, and I will begin with you. And so God gave Isaac suffering through the blindness that afflicted him in his old age. Isaac's belief that earthly suffering leads to eternal rewards is an old one within Judaism, though pushback against that idea is just as old. But while the Midrash describes the first suffering as being the first example of physical pain or disability, it's not hard to look at Isaac's life and conclude that the first historical example of suffering was actually his traumatic experience on the altar, looking up at his father holding a knife to his throat. It makes sense then that Isaac, devoted to upholding the burden of history driven by his belief in having been vindicated by God's blessing, would have believed that since emotional or physical pain was good for him, it ought to be the standard for everybody else. In his book Heavenly Torah, Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel explains how Judaism welcomes diversity of opinion. Jewish thought is nourished from two sources, Heschel writes, and it follows two parallel paths, the path of vision and the path of reason. With respect to those things that are given to objective measurement, reason is primary. With respect to things of the heart, vision is primary. Torah can only be acquired in two ways, with reason's lens and the heart's lens, end quote. He then goes on to quote from the Talmud, "One who is blind in one eye is exempt from the obligation to go on pilgrimage." In other words, the Torah, God's instructions for how to live an ethical and holy life, can only be understood by using both the head and the heart, by having both reason, and vision. Without both, one cannot be expected to have the capability to encounter or understand that which is holy. In both of these categories, Isaac missed the mark. He did not demonstrate enough intellectual reasoning to realize that he had options beyond those chosen by his father. And his emotional vision was also deficient. He wished for others to have pain just because he experienced it himself, a common sentiment, one that's often expressed in the phrase, hurt people hurt people. But it's not one to be emulated. And so ultimately, Isaac's intellectual and emotional blindness was made manifest in his physical blindness and in both eyes, not just one. No wonder that God's continuation of the covenant with Isaac was nonetheless instead made for the sake of my servant Abraham. What Isaac couldn't see, even when he still had physical eyesight, was that while Jews are called to uphold the mitzvot and our traditions, we should not be so beholden to them as to inhibit our own individuality, or worse, cause suffering upon others who do not fit the historic mold. When the students of the Hasidic master Reb Zusha found him crying on his deathbed, they asked him, "Why do you cry? You were almost as wise as Moses and as kind as Abraham." Reb Zusha answered, "When I pass from this world and appear before the heavenly tribunal, they won't ask me, 'Zusha, why weren't you as wise as Moses or as kind as Abraham?' Rather, they'll ask me, 'Zusha, why weren't you Zusha?'" Isaac was trying so hard to be Abraham that he nearly failed at being Isaac. But Judaism also teaches us that everyone, even late in life, is capable of change. And so too is Isaac. When his son Esau asks him for a blessing to replace the one that Jacob stole, Isaac at first reverts to his pattern of relying on precedent, saying that nothing can be done once the original blessing has been uttered. But then, in response to the tears of his firstborn son, Isaac finally makes an independent choice, listening to both his head and his heart, and offers a blessing nonetheless. It is then, finally, in his last recorded act before he dies, that Isaac leaves behind Shlomazeldom and becomes a patriarch worthy of emulating, an independent and empathetic thinker, to use another Yiddish word, a mensch.
If you enjoyed this program, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts, and discover JTS's other series by visiting jtsa.edu/podcasts. To learn with JTS faculty in live online classes, visit jtsa.edu/online. And you can get in touch with us by emailing onlinelearning@jtsa.edu. Thanks for listening.